to go to and see them, like, a beauty pageant.
Sure.
Or, like, some kind of contest.
Okay.
And then their car breaks down in the middle of, like, bumfuck nowhere in this very, very country town.
Sure.
And it's these three drag queens. And then they're kind of isolated from the people. They're just like, oh, they're different. And then at the very end, they realize that even though we dress more fabulous, we're all the same.
And that's Too Long Fu.
That's Too Long Fu. Thanks for everything, Julie Newmar. That's the whole title. Oh, yeah, because they before they leave on their road trip, they find an autographed picture of Julie Newmar, who I think she played the first Wonder Woman.
Okay.
And they're like, it is our mission to bring, to go, yeah, it was so good. You should
okay.
Watch it. You should watch it.
Well, welcome to Legendary Lasses, everyone. Yes, we're recording. I'm Ashley Davis, and to my right is KB Thomas, and then to my left is Sally Mendoza, who is just telling us about Su Wong Fu.
Listen, y'all should watch that movie, and according to an Instagram post from John Leguizamo, it's now on Netflix.
It sure is. I still can't believe we met him.
Yeah, we met him, and then he liked our photos on Instagram.
He did like our photos on Instagram.
Which I'm basically famous, and we were really awkward to him.
So awkward.
Like,
it was alright though. He's still like,
I did the double handshake.
He still called you baby, and then liked both of our Instagram posts.
But it's still weird.
It's okay. When we're famous, we'll meet
what
him.
Do we just tell? Oh, it's you, Stinky Dinky.
What?
Y'all are watching
that. Yeah. But this is the moment when we're famous. We're gonna have him over to a dinner party, and we're gonna take an awkward family photo at the front door with a Polaroid camera.
Absolutely.
But before the photo gets taken, you're gonna say, "My favorite movie is The Pest," and I'm gonna be like, "I love you in Moulin Rouge." Cheese.
Right. Here's some Moulin Rouge.
Yeah. He was
Toulouse-Lautrec.
Yeah.
I didn't put that together.
He also has a great one-man show called Latin History for Morons,
which is what we saw him in.
It was really awesome.
Anyway, this is Legendary Lasses, where we talk about the most badass ladies of history.
Not John Leguizamo.
Which could be another podcast altogether. This week we're going to focus on Artemisia Gentileschi, who is a Baroque painter from Rome.
You know what I say about the Baroque period? If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Shut up!
Isn't that a line from Cogsworth in Beauty and the Beast?
You know what? It's a line from my fucking brain.
I'm pretty sure that's Cogsworth.
I feel like it's everywhere, but it might be in Beauty and the Beast.
I didn't get it from Beauty and the Beast. I got it from my own noggin.
Well, that's great. What are we drinking today, Sally?
We are drinking Austin East Cider's Blood Orange Cider.
Mm-hmm.
This is not an advertisement.
We are not sponsored yet.
But Austin East Cider's.
We love you. Okay, great. So we're going to talk a little bit about the main players of the story we're going to focus on, the background, the... I guess, spoiler alert, trial, and then some of Artemisia's work towards the end here. So, Sally, get us started. All right.
Imagine it.
Okay.
16th century Italy.
Okay. Hold on, wait, let me imagine it. I'm imagining it.
Okay. 16th century, Baroque period, a little bit after the Renaissance.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are the dresses like? Would it flatter my figure?
Yes, it would.
Okay, great.
It's been a while since I've taken costume history, so...
Okay, great.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say yes, though.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Go on.
Okay, so, Artemisia...
Disclaimer, we don't know Italian.
Yes.
So we're gonna do our best to pronounce all of these names.
I can pronounce probably two pastas, and one of them is spaghetti.
The other one is tortellini.
No, it's fettuccine.
Oh. Okay, well. Yeah.
Three pastas.
Okay, go on. We're in Baroque Italy.
Artemisia was born on July 8th, 1593.
That's
to Orazio Gentileschi and Prudentia Montanella.
Okay, sure. At any time you need help, huh?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, great. I'm there.
Okay. Orazio Ghibellesci, he was an accomplished Italian painter under the influence of Caravaggio.
And they actually knew each other.
Yeah. They're buds.
Okay, so can we talk about Caravaggio for a second?
Yes. I still haven't seen the paintings over at the...
Okay. Museum. Oh my god. The painting of Mary and Martha? Yes.
Yeah.
It's at the DMA right now, and I walked in and had a very spiritual experience with this painting. I almost cried. I did it because I was with my friend Juniper, and I thought it might be weird, but I love it.
So we should go, and we should cry there,
We
right?
should. Yeah. Yeah. I need to go back and cry.
Sorry.
I love Caravaggio's work. He's a little bit of an asshole.
Listen, I'm an asshole, too.
Yeah, they're, like, a lovable asshole, and I feel like
this was fighting people.
Yeah, like, I feel like Van Gogh might have been a lovable asshole, too. But Caravaggio is, like, the asshole who's going to get into bar fights and then blame the other person.
Is he the kind of asshole where, like, you're just, like, you have to be on your best behavior?
Yes. Yeah, that is Caravaggio.
Your treat.
Yeah! And his treat is booze from the tavern.
I was just thinking, like, a cookie. Okay.
No. He gets the booze. And he was, like... stabbed outside of a tavern or something.
That's
it?
Called street cred, bruh.
Yeah, I think he died, though. Okay, so anyway.
Died in his hood. Prediction about Toni. Not a lot of information about her. She was born in 1575 and died in 1605. And Artemisia was 12. That's all I got about her mom.
That's rough.
Yeah.
Bark, bark.
Woof.
At a young age, Orazio brought Artemisia to his studio as an assistant, which is where she started learning her craft. I don't get to think as assistant. I guess it was just like, hey, yeah, just,
Was it that he was, like, trying to train her, or...
Well, first, I found he just brought, like, just for help. Just like, okay. Hey, I need someone to, like, you know, I wash my brushes, or, like, you know, do...
And his 12-year-old daughter was the best.
Yeah.
So she had three brothers, actually.
Yeah, she had three
brothers. But, like, she was the only one with any talent.
And she was the oldest, too, so he's like, you're the oldest, you can...
Okay.
I don't know about y'all, but growing up, like... My parents worked, me and my brothers. We were just free labor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that's what it was. I think that's what a little bit of it was.
Sure.
And initially, it wasn't Orazio's intention for her to become a painter.
Okay.
He actually tried to send her to the nunnery, like,
Oh, God.
Right? And I think a lot of it has...
She might have actually done really well at a nunnery, now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, she would have been that nun that, like, if she was a teacher, would, like, been like, all right...
I could see her doing very well just, like, being a very scholarly nun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or I could see her just being like, this is fucked up, bruh.
Yeah, that's
being, like, being, like, the real nun.
Sure.
My mom went to a Catholic school, and she just told me that that she played baseball with nuns.
Whoa, that's a movie,
like,
I would watch.
Like, in Habits?
Yeah,
like,
in their Habits.
Wait.
Like, they put, not baseball, kickball. But still, like,
that changes it even more. Wait, okay, hold on.
Like, hiking up their Habits.
And they hiked up their Habits.
Yes! This is a movie I would watch.
This shit, like, was Bishop Lynch, right, like, in Dallas.
That's like, okay. Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay. Hmm. I need a movie about kickball nuns.
That's...
Okay, where are we?
Kickball nuns.
She's his apprentice.
It's like this movie Dodgeball, but it's just nuns.
I imagine a mix of, like, the Sound of Music and Dodgeball.
Yeah!
And
It is a musical. I'm glad you picked up on this pitch. It is a musical.
Will Julie Andrews be in it?
Obviously.
Okay. Will there be Nazis in it?
Probably.
They're the rival dodgeball team.
Yeah, but they're Nazi nuts.
Will Ben Stiller be in this movie?
I mean, obviously. Julie Andrews and Ben Stiller, the combo acting duo we've been waiting for. Okay.
All right. So I tried to send her to a nunnery. And a lot of this was probably because of women's work remained semi-clandestine and informal, both stimulated by and subordinate to family needs. That was a quote from Elizabeth Cropper. She had an essay accompanying an exhibition titled Orazio and Artemisia Ghibellesci.
Interesting.
So, it's probably just like,
Sure. Okay.
A lot of, like, can't think of it, but it's just like, it was just kind of, what was it, like, I don't know. I don't know how to... You know what I mean.
Yeah, like, it was mostly expected of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure. It was very taboo for women to be like,
I want to do anything.
Yeah, for real.
Like, Barbie, I want to be an astronaut. I want to be a baker. But they're
go be a nun.
Yeah.
She's like, all right.
Another Barbie movie that should be made. Barbie Nun. There's lots of nun movies I'm coming up with. I think it's because I'm very excited for Conjuring 3.
That'll be so good. I'm so excited for the spoons.
Mm-hmm.
But let's get back to Artemisia.
I'm sorry, yes. I'll stop talking about movies about nuns. Yes. Sister Act, though, y'all. Okay, I'm sorry.
I definitely wrote a college paper that included Sister Act.
Yes, you did. Yes. I remember that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Uratsu's attempts were unsuccessful, obviously. And so Artemisia remained in the studio. And he eventually accepted her desire to become an artist and even began, like, promoting her skills.
Nice. Good dad.
Yeah. And he introduced her to working artists of her own, including Caravaggio.
Okay, hold on.
Our homeboy.
Hold on. Women's life at this point.
They were just. What?
They were mostly confined to the house.
Yeah, they were just, you know, making babies and keeping the house.
And, like, especially as a young girl right now, like, in Artemisia's story, like, yeah. And I'm assuming there are certain kinds of people that her dad doesn't want her to associate with.
Well, yeah.
But he introduces her to Caravaggio?
Listen, I think a lot of it's just, like, it's not what you know, it's who you know, because it's like, yo, it's, you know...
Okay, but it's
begrudgingly
still,
like, introduced.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's just like it's just networking.
Yeah,
just for networking purposes. Well, and also,
I don't know if I'd let my daughter around Caravaggio. Well, that's all I'm saying.
I don't know, but like his. To be fair, his style called chiaroscuro, which means contrast of light.
Our terms.
Yeah. Okay. And that really influenced her work.
Yeah.
So I mean, there you go.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, in 1610, when she was 17, Artemisia painted Susanna and the Elders, which is her first known work.
It's beautiful.
So good. And so she was fucking 17. You know what I was doing at 17? I don't fucking know.
School.
Yeah. I was like, I was learning about calculus.
I may have started writing, but nothing good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same here.
Where she produces a masterpiece at 17.
Yeah. And I love not only the painting, but the painting that, like, when it's x-rayed. And it shows
the
like,
sketch original. Underneath. That's my favorite.
So y'all need to Google that shit.
I read about that sketch in a short story that I wrote about her. Mm-hmm. Whatever. Okay.
Later after that, Marazio wrote that she had, quote-unquote, become so skilled that I can venture... to say that today she has no peer. That's fucking great. It's just like, the student has become the teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's really
That's
rad.
A very, like, Yoda Luke Skywalker moment.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But instead of little green Yoda dude,
it's an old Italian father.
Yeah.
Hold on, I need to hear the Yoda do or do not, there is no try, and the old Italian father of Please, Sally, make it happen!
No!
He can be an Italian from Brooklyn.
He can be an Italian from
Brooklyn. Okay, fine. Okay.
In 1611, Orazio hired the painter Agostino Tassi. Tutor Artemisia to refine her painting and to teach her perspective. Now we get on to Agostino Tassi, this motherfucker! Yes. He's a piece of shit, for lack of a better term. Born in 1578, about 100 miles north of Rome. But he claims to have been born in Rome.
Liar.
Family name is Buonamici. Sound right?
Sure.
Yeah. I think so.
But he adopted the surname Tassi to quote unquote give substance to a story that he's adopted by the Marchese Tassi. And who is Marchese Tassi, you ask?
Who is Marchese Tassi?
I don't fucking know.
Okay.
I looked everywhere I looked, and I scrubbed the internet, and I found nothing.
Okay, so basically, what we know right now, after three sentences...
That he's a lying piece of shit?
Yeah. Also, can we talk about how this is, like, a time in history... Like, where you can just, like, go to a different town and be like, no, I'm not that guy. I'm actually this guy, and I haven't done anything wrong.
Exactly. Yeah. But, like, he was actually, like, the son of a furrier.
What is a furrier?
He's a guy that, like, he makes furs.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Furrier.
Yeah. Or something with the fur industry.
Okay.
And then...
What types of fur? Do we know?
I don't know. I don't know.
Ermine, probably.
Yeah, probably.
I feel like that's an old... Italian,
yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Ermine, maybe,
Bear.
Bears in Italy, yeah.
Yeah. Are there bears in Italy?
I don't know.
That doesn't matter. Go on.
What about raccoons? That'd be really cute.
But also, like, I don't want to skin a little heart-stealing bandit.
A grubby.
How dare you? You're a monster.
Yeah.
Okay, he's the son of a furrier.
Yeah, and then, but through all of this bullshit, he's still considered a master of perspective and a good painter.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they were having he was tutoring her and all that stuff. And then when Artemisia was 18, she was raped by Tassie during one of her lessons. Like a piece of shit. Yeah. And then he found out she was a virgin and promised to marry her but kept postponing it. Like, you know, fucking piece of shit.
So right now, what do we know?
We know, what do you mean?
We know, okay, so there's Artemisia, there's Orazio, her father,
mm-hmm.
There's this dirtbag Tassie, scoundrel and a rogue.
He's a piece of shit.
Yeah, Tassie. Okay.
Worldwide fucking, yeah.
So, okay, he's not meant to tutor her.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, where is her father? Because, like, is he also in the studio? With, like, the painting studio, I'm assuming?
No, because the reason, like, because he had, like, one-on-one time with her. He was, like, not there. I don't know where the fuck he was.
That seems highly unusual for that.
Yeah,
time
it does. Yeah. Because I was like, wouldn't she have someone, like...
watching
like,
her?
Yeah, like...
Like a maid or servants or something.
What's the term? Like a chaperone.
Yeah. Well,
and, like,
they're
like, leave enough room for Jesus. You're not gonna be like, well, Jesus is in my heart.
Where's the Holy Ghost, though? There was a chaperone in the house... But
where was she in the room? Like,
yeah, like, that's why I don't understand.
Oh, well, was she just like, oh, you have to, I need to go.
Well, okay, and I guess here...
Do my whites.
I guess the question that I have about this, which I guess we'll never know, is, was this day different than any other lesson? Because, I'll get into this a little bit later, the chaperone of the house kind of played a part in this attack. That was highly premeditated, but, like, was she just never in the room with them? And I guess that's a question we'll never really know.
Yeah. Well,
that's
when you talk about the trial.
Okay, let's get into the trial. So first, what we know about the attack is that Tassie did have two accomplices, both of whom were close family friends with the Gentileschis.
Mm-hmm.
The first accomplice, which is this lady that I was talking about, she was actually a neighbor, and her name was Tuzia. She had moved into the Gentileschi household to serve as a chaperone and protect Artemisia's virginity. She literally had one job.
Does she have, what's her name? Dot on Spaceballs. Where she has, like, the virginity detector. She's like, no, y'all gotta have enough room. You don't know?
I don't remember that.
You don't remember this?
No, I've only seen Spaceballs once.
You need to shut up.
It's like on Robin Hood Men in Tights.
That, like, maid.
Yeah, and then... Yeah.
That's such a great film.
It is such a good one.
This has become a film podcast.
You guys were changing it. So she literally had one job, and she actively acted for the opposition.
She had one job!
One job, Karen! The second accomplice was a man named Cosimo Corilli? We're gonna just call him Cosimo. Cosimo was the cousin of a close family friend who was named... This one I'm gonna need help with, y'all. There's a lot of T's. Is it Statesi?
Let's see.
Statesi?
Yeah.
We're gonna go with Statesi. Sure. And here's the thing about Cosmo that really gets me. He was a papal official.
But at this time, wasn't, like, the Catholic Church, like, super fucking corrupt?
Yeah, like, y'all know about the Borgias, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so, like, yes, but it still gets me, and I don't know what his job technically was with a papal office. Anyway,
He was just, like, sorting the mail.
Yeah, yeah, he worked in the mail room.
Like, yeah, I work for the Pope.
Pope Innocent the Tenth.
Or he washes the toilets or something like that.
I hope he was a janitor. Cosmo also, during the trial, it was said that he extracted a few paintings, quote-unquote, from Artemisia that belonged to her father.
Now he's stealing shit?
So he basically helped this man rape a 17-year-old and then stole some paintings, one of which was described as a rather large painting of Judith from the Bible. And it's like, but why? You could just pay her dad for those paintings.
You
like, Orazio's not an unknown painter in Rome.
It's called a five-finger discount. It's about the thrill of the hunt.
He's just a dirtbag. So the second thing we know about the attack is that Cosmo probably helped plan the attack for Tosi due to being angry at Artemisia for rejecting a sexual relationship with Cosmo. He probably also encouraged Tassie that it would be fine because she, quote-unquote, wasn't a virgin. But this will come back later in the trial, so just hold on to that. Tuzia made sure that they could get into the house, and she let Tosi into the house through her own apartment of the building. And the most that we know about the attack actually does come from the trial transcripts, where the actual attack is described. Now I'm going to leave out the details that may be disturbing to some listeners because it is very, thorough. So on the pretext of looking at a painting near the bedroom, Artemisia says Agostino pushed her into the bedroom, threw her on the bed, covered her mouth so that she could not shout, and assaulted her. Resisting, she scratched his face and even threw a knife at him, slightly wounding him in the chest, but was not able to stop. Which is a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot. But after the attack, Artemisia reportedly rushed to a table for a knife and threatened Tosi, screaming, "I'd like to kill you with this knife because you have dishonored me." Which is, like, a hell of a line.
Yeah.
And purportedly, Tosi opened his coat and proclaimed, "Here I am," mocking her.
Oh, fuck no.
So, after the attack, Tosi realized that she was a virgin and that he could get in trouble for it, and kept telling her, "Oh, no, I'm going to marry you," like you were saying.
Well, that's one hell of a proposal.
Yeah.
Like,
but by saying this, he actually kept a physical relationship with Artemisia going on for several months before it got too much. So here's the most important thing to remember about this trial. Artemisia could have done nothing by herself. Her father had to be the one to take Tassi to court, but not for assault. This was a lawsuit of damaged property. More specifically, it was a case of stuprum, which is Latin, basically for rape, but it's the only scenario in which rape could be considered a legal matter in Italian law at the time. Elizabeth Cohen, who deals a lot with Italian law around this time and has written a lot about Artemisia, she has an article called The Trials of Artemisia Gentileschi, A Rape as History. She points out rape then, called stuprum, only legally concerning if the woman's virginity was sacrificed, in which case the honor of both the woman, who was now of lesser value in the marriage market, and her family, who is responsible for the dowry, were at stake. So basically, you could only take this to court if you knew that a woman's virginity was lost in the assault, and she is now damaged goods.
Which
is messed up.
Which
is messed up.
Highly messed up.
Like,
but
the early 1600s.
It's the early 1600s.
So a lot of things are messed up.
There's a lot of things that are messed up, but, and we'll get into it later, but there's a lot of, in the trial transcript, where it just sounds like questions we hear about women today who come forward. But anyway, the fact that this was a case of stuprum meant for Tosi from the get-go, the point of the trial was to tell a narrative of Artemisia being a loose woman. So he didn't know she was a virgin prior to the attack. Afterwards, he has to kind of quickly come up with this idea that she was a whore, basically, and that she wasn't, quote-unquote, damaged bartering goods. which is a terrible title. So like I said, they did carry out a physical relationship after the attack, and she did have to defend this fact in court when it was brought up. She did say, quote unquote, "What I was doing with him, I only did so that as he had dishonored me, he would marry me." While it's unclear if Artemisia wished for marriage because she was ultimately had feelings for Tossie, or because it may have been the only option of marriage for her now, is unclear. But I think we all know.
Yeah.
No, this man attacked her. So Tossie
brutally attacked her.
And like, it's someone she knew and had to have trusted.
Yeah.
And like, these other two people that she knew and trusted ultimately betrayed her. And it's just very upsetting. So Tossie runs a smear campaign against the whole Gentileschi household during the entire trial.
Mm-hmm.
This included Tossie bringing in friends that swore to the court that the Gentileschi household was a brothel, and many of them saying that they also had relations with Artemisia or her maid, which may have been Tuzia. It's kind of unclear about that in the transcript. Men came to the court telling the judge that Artemisia was a nude model for her father and his painter friends, and further exaggerated this by saying that her father often acted as a pimp, selling Artemisia to the visiting painters.
I don't think, like, the hats with, like, the long feather weren't... I just...
Wait, what?
Like, when you say pimp, you imagine about... But, like, this is also 1600s.
I don't mean a 1970s pimp. I mean...
But, like, I imagine, like, a mix of the two. Or
I mean, they did have hats similar to that, so yeah.
Yeah, but...
Kind of.
Yeah.
Did he have, like, a cane?
I think he had more of the painter's hat. Do you know what I'm talking about? Where it's kind of, like, a pointed... Like, kind of like a...
Yeah.
It makes, like, a... Anyway. Several of them also testified that Artemisia wrote letters to them, which range from typical love letters to more erotic letters. But here's the catch. Artemisia was mostly illiterate and... could not have written elaborate letters like they testified.
But she was a good painter, so she could have drawn pictures.
Maybe they were pictorial. Maybe they were. I don't know. That'd be the worst letter to get.
Right.
So, of course, this is absurd. And at these allegations, Artemisia swears to the court, "I never had any sexual relations with any other person besides the said Agostino." The muckraking that Tossie did in this courtroom was laughable, that on many occasions the judge actually stops testimony to admonish Tossie for lying. And they are in the transcripts, and it basically is like Tossie saying something about Artemisia and the judge going, no, hold on, sir, stop lying, I know who you are, you were in this courtroom 3 months ago for something similar, stop lying. And he's like, okay, here's what really happened. And then just, like, tells another lie. And this happens over and over and over again in the transcript. But it's crazy. Don't worry, though, because it does seem that some people came to the aid of the Gentileschis, which is where we get back to Statesi, who is that close family friend and the cousin of Cosimo. He actually helped prepare Orazio and Artemisia's depositions for court, and basically helped them prepare, because, of course, they had never been in a courtroom for anything like this before. I don't know exactly what Statesi did, but it seems like he's pretty involved in the court system. He is also the main witness who testifies against Tossie. He claims that the painter actually confessed to, quote-unquote, deflowering the young girl.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also where Cosimo's encouragement of Tossie comes back. Statesi testifies... Ooh, that's fun to say.
Yes.
Statesi testifies that Cosimo told Tossie that Artemisia wasn't a virgin, leading Tossie to think nothing legal could be done about it if he did attack her.
Oh, God.
But...
What a sentence.
Like,
you rape this girl because you think nothing's gonna happen to you.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, it's the only case of rape that could go to law, though, at the time.
God.
Yeah. But Tossie was already a convicted rapist in Italy before this, meaning he had done something the exact same way. Because if this is the only way a case of rape can go to court, he's also done this to another young girl.
I have a question.
At least one.
So, like, if he's a convicted rapist, like, why did her dad let her...
Was like, this before he changed his name, though?
That's a really good question. I can't find that this is something that happened before he changed his name. I feel like he went around as Tassie as a long time.
Yeah.
But, like, again, like we were saying, this is kind of a time in history where you just have to take a person's word for who they are and what they've done.
My thing is, like, wouldn't you have gotten a vibe from him? Like, you know, like the...
Like a rapey
vibe. Like a rapey vibe. Well, like a pee-pee man vibe. Like the guy that, like, doesn't wash their hands after they pee. You know what
gross.
I mean?
Gross.
Exactly! You get that
like,
vibe.
Here's the frightening thing about this, is that most of the time, you can't tell the difference.
Is it because they have lots of charisma?
Usually.
And because they talk with their hands. Yeah,
that's charisma. No, I mean, most of the time you can't tell. Most of the time it is people that you trust. Most of the time it is someone the family knows even, you know, like, unfortunately that's just one of the things.
Yeah.
But, anyway, you may ask me why Cosmo had said something like this, too.
Why did Cosmo say something like this?
Well, he repeatedly attempted to assault Artemisia himself and failed. So, this was another kind of, like I said before, rejecting a sexual relationship with him really pissed him off. And he thought, well, at least I can plan something.
That's why the girl had the knife. She was used to all this shit happening with Cosmo.
Probably, yeah.
She was ready.
Probably. Also, like, how many times is Cosmo just coming into the house to visit and finding Artemisia by herself?
Where is everyone in this house?
I know her dad traveled for business a lot. I mean, he's a painter, so he gets commissions. But it's like, she had three brothers. Where are they?
They're not painting.
Maybe they're apprenticing elsewhere.
Maybe one of her brothers was a painter.
Maybe he goes with her dad, and like maybe the other two are apprenticing somewhere else. Mm. But it's like, there's no one in this house, and it's Artemisia by herself with a knife. Like, get this girl some help.
Some good help, not terrible chaperones. Or a dog. Like rapists.
Yeah, they should have just had a dog.
I think I just want a dog.
Yeah. So,
what kind of dog would she have?
One of those, like, skinny Italian greyhound dogs.
But that wouldn't help. Need some.
Why?
And do you think they're gonna be vicious?
Maybe.
So, another thing about this relationship with Cosmo and Tassie is that Tassie basically owed his life to Cosmo for several different reasons. And one of the reasons that he kept telling Artemisia that they would marry and then keep pushing it off was because Cosmo did not bless the marriage, basically, and disagreed with it wholeheartedly, which is like...
You shouldn't have told him to rape her!
Yeah! You dumbass! Also, like, you sound like you're a stupid head. Like, I can't. So basically, Tassie didn't want to rock the boat. But Tassie also ruined another marriage proposal that was already kind of, like, on its way to being finished that Uratsu had arranged for Artemisia.
Yeah.
Completely ruined it. And unfortunately, Cosmo dies shortly after the trial starts, after getting Tassie out of prison in 1611.
Oh, how convenient.
And you may ask, why was Tassie in prison before the trial started?
Why was Tassie in prison before the trial started?
Because he was tried for incest against his sister-in-law.
What?
Yes. He raped his sister-in-law, was imprisoned in 1611, gets out, and then immediately is back in the courtroom for this case against Artemisia.
He just cannot keep it in his pants.
Like, dude, go live in a cabin in the forest and be alone. Nobody likes you.
He needs to go to, like, a male version of a nunnery. Like, away from society.
Yeah.
Where there's no sex.
A monastery. He needs to become, I was about to say a priest, but then I said, nope, that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Because we have enough of that. A monk.
Yeah.
Another witness for the Gentileschis was actually a friar who claimed Tassie was still married, which was kind of a surprise to Artemisia. She knew that he had been married, but he always denied that she was still alive.
Oh.
The deposition of this friar was so damning for Tassie because he touches on the key point of Tassie's wife. If she was indeed alive, then this would be why he couldn't marry her.
Mm-hmm.
In both the trial of 1611 and the trial of 1612, which is Artemisia's trial, we hear that Agostino actually actively tried to dispose of his wife by sending assassins to Livorno, where she lived.
Oh, my gosh.
It's also kind of a myth of, like, he hired bandits to kill her, like, just all sorts of things. This guy is a dirt bag. But it's like, I keep flipping on who I blame the most in this. Like, do I blame Tossie, or do I blame Cosimo most? Do I blame this neighbor, Tuzia, who just lets them in for, like, no other reason than they maybe asked her? Like, I don't know what kind of a grudge she would have against the Gentileschis.
I feel like I mostly blame Cosimo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Tossie's terrible, but he didn't mastermind this. I feel like Cosimo knows who he's talking to.
Yeah.
And will suggest, like, hey, why don't you just rape your student a little bit? And Tossie will be like, okay, because that's his character already.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, I just feel like he's just a master manipulator and, like, a very dangerous person. And he's in a position of power. Mm-hmm. Like, he works in the papal office. People are gonna listen to him. He can commission painters, obviously, because he's stealing paintings left, right, and center.
Yeah.
But, anyway, throughout this whole mess of a trial, Artemisia's story never changed, and she was forthcoming in the details of the relationship she had carried on with Tassie. Mm-hmm. But that was not going to be good enough for this court.
Of course it isn't!
At the time, Italian law would only consider it a true rape and honest confession if the woman could testify under duress. What do I mean by under duress, you may ask?
What do you mean by under duress, Ashley?
Well, for Artemisia, this meant retelling her testimony and being questioned while being tortured with thumb screws.
What the fuck is a thumb screw?
So, thumb screws are cords of rope tied around your hands and then pulled tightly. They actually did this during the Salem witch trials as well. Basically, it can break your hands, your fingers, whatever they tie it onto.
Oh,
really.
That's right, because she's a painter and that's what she fucking uses all the fucking time.
So, I'd like to say this. Like, she's a painter. She knows she's a painter. She risked ruining her only chance of livelihood, really.
But I feel like she'd be one of those people, like, even if her hands are fucking mangled up,
she'd, like, paint with her mouth or
something.
Yeah,
like, yeah. You know, she'd be like, I'll fucking make it work.
I feel like she had to paint.
Yeah.
I feel like that was her, like, her only expression was painting.
Yes.
I think we'll probably talk about that when we talk about her work. Somehow, being tortured with thumb screws and repeatedly being asked, did Tossie rape you, and saying, yes, it's true, repeatedly, proved she was being honest, and she was able to get through this torturous testimony for the last time. But unfortunately, the last few pages of the conviction and sentencing are missing from the trial transcripts. So we have no way of knowing what happened to Tassie legally. We do know that Tassie was a highly sought-after painter in Rome and was friends and had a patron with the Pope Innocent X. So he was allowed to be a free man in Rome, no matter what the sentencing had been. He enjoyed a very long and prosperous career in Rome. Unlike Artemisia, who fled Rome 2 days after the end of the trial and moved to Florence. We do know that at least six of the men that Tossie brought in were taken to court by Orazio, who filed suit for bearing false witness. So hopefully some of these people got their comeuppance.
Yeah.
But after moving to Florence, Artemisia was married to a relative of one of the witnesses who came to the aid of the Gentileschis, and they were married 1 month after the end of the trial. This is mostly due to trying to salvage the reputation of the family. Her new husband was also a painter, which is why they relocated to Florence. Florence was kind of booming at this time. The marriage did fall apart there a few years later. They separated, but they did have one daughter who made it to adulthood, which is kind of a big deal on its own. Even though the marriage wasn't a happy one, it did give her the opportunity to grow and flourish as an artist in her own right, instead of being under her dad's wing or her husband's wing. She was the first woman accepted into the Academy del Disegno, which is, like, a great title to have. Like, oh yeah, I was the first woman. She also had brilliant thinkers of the time come and discuss art, philosophy, science, new ideas, all in her salon. And enjoyed the patronage of many high-ranking Florence officials.
And by salon, we don't mean, like, a hair salon, like...
No, I mean, like, a parlor. Like, join me in my parlor.
Yeah, my salon.
Because
I don't think it was just, like, did you hear about Myrtle the other day?
I mean, it may have been. Like, did you see what they were wearing?
Yes. I like to think that's what went on.
Yeah.
A lot like Steel Magnolias.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pick up and talk about kind of a little more about her painting career and a little bit to do with that. So, of course, because of her gender, her artistic education and production are somewhat limited. Not as much as many other women of the time or even since, but there are certain expectations that sort of come with what a female artist should be producing that influences her contemporaries to praise more of her portraits and still lifes. But what she actually liked to paint and what we've come to know her for painting is all these heroic women, either from biblical stories or historical women. And sometimes she would have patrons that wanted these kind of paintings, and that seemed to be kind of her personal preference in her painting.
Mm-hmm.
Like you mentioned, she starts to study at the Accademia del Disegno. It's been suggested that that's mostly due to a different Cosimo in this story, a good Cosimo, the Grand Duke of Tuscany, Cosimo II, who was one of the de' Medicis.
Oh, sure.
And it's said that he may have been instrumental in
maybe one of the only good Medicis. Yeah.
I always call him the Medici collar.
The what?
You didn't hear about the... Never mind.
What did you just say?
It's called the Medici collar. It's like part of a dress. It's like the thing. And never mind.
I'm gonna look that up later.
It's a fancy collar.
It's a fancy collar. Yep.
But this Grand Duke, it's said that he may have been instrumental in her becoming the first woman to be admitted.
Oh.
And she's admitted in 1616.
I mean, they did like to listen to the Medicis there.
Yeah.
So that would make sense.
I think the Medicis like to be listened to. So,
Yeah, probably.
So I'm going to talk about some of her kind of influential works, what we know her best for. And what's most remarkable about some of these works is how they compare with works that are by other artists who are male artists that have the same subject.
Mm.
So one of the most famous ones is Susanna and the Elders, which I think Sally mentioned earlier. It's her earliest known painting. It's done when she's 17. And this is based on the biblical story where Susanna's bathing in her garden. These two elders kind of accost her and say, if you don't have sex with us, we're going to, you know, say that you were meeting some young lover under this tree. So it's a picture of them sort of in the act of accosting her doing this.
Sure.
And it's noted that this is sort of a less idealistic rendering of Susanna. A lot of the male artists who paint the same subject will paint her as sort of just this very beautiful nude lady,
right,
semi-reclined on a fountain.
And not really bothered, it seems, by the insinuation.
And so with her painting, definitely, and especially this first version, because she does a couple of other versions of the same story.
Yeah.
Especially in this first version, she's really bothered by this.
Right.
But actually, her original conception for this painting, which we maybe touched on a little bit, the underpainting of this, what she had originally planned, which we've found out from, like, x-raying it and all that good technology, really, Susanna is in anguish. She's, like, screaming, trying to get away from them. She's holding a knife in one hand.
Mm-hmm. Isn't one of the elders, like, gripping her hair, like, holding her hair? Yeah.
And I think that's still in the final version, but it's just not as, like, hands-on.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. But it's kind of generally understood that maybe her father saw this version and said, no, you maybe need to make this a little more palatable.
Walter was just like, what the fuck?
What are you doing? So it kind of softened it a little bit, but you still get some of that general feeling of, you know, these men are trying to blackmail her and you know. So that's kind of understood to be her father's influence on the painting.
Sure.
And she still is fairly young at the time.
Their styles are very similar as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And very similar to Caravaggio around this time, too. The next major one I want to talk about that a lot of people know is Judith Slaying Holofernes.
Yes! I love it!
Yes, this is Ashley's favorite. So she does a couple of versions of this. The first one is done around the time of the trial and when all this is going on.
Which makes sense to me.
So, and it's kind of given attention because it's this creation of a violent image involving heroic women. And so this is something that's kind of raw violence of a woman against a man.
Yeah.
And that's kind of fitting for around the time she's painting it. And unlike male artist treatment of this subject, Artemisia's version, it Judith is a lot more, like, strong and determined, and you can feel that she, mm-hmm. like, she is beheading Polly.
She's a very active participant in this painting, where, like, I don't know, you may be talking about those Caravaggio's.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead, yeah.
Comparing it with Caravaggio's, you know, he does this same subject, it's a similar composition, actually, but Judith is sort of, like, shrinking away from the act.
And, like, barely has a grip on the knife, really.
Yes. It like, if you were to think about the forces of what's behind her, it doesn't seem like she should be able to defend him.
Yeah.
She's really kind of shrinking away from the task. But Artemisia is...
I think that these two paintings I'm for sure putting up.
Yes.
So you can go look at the difference.
Yes. We'll post some of the paintings so everyone can have
And, like, even them. The maid in both of the paintings. Mm-hmm. Judith's maid in both of these paintings are... Which I think is interesting, because if Tuzia is meant to be a protector of Artemisia, mm-hmm. she's really wishing for a person that's like Judith's maid in this painting,
yes.
I think.
Yes.
Who's, like, forcefully holding down Polypherides.
Yeah, because in this painting, the maid is, you know, on top of him, holding him down. In Caravaggio, she's sort of standing to the side. She's older as well, and sort of like a passive figure acting.
Just kind of there.
Yes. So those are kind of two of the major works. Both of them are done a little bit earlier in her career, but I feel like those are the ones that we know best.
Yeah.
She does continue painting for the rest of her life. She does move to Florence, like we've said. And during this period, the works start to be a little more detailed and decorative.
Mm-hmm.
There's sort of a courtly atmosphere in Florence, and she's painting for the Medicis now, you know?
Yeah, like,
gotta, like,
whatever you want.
Style it up a little bit. So she does have some paintings of Mary Magdalene, and she's frequently painted in gold. She's sort of decked out, you know, and you compare this to other images of her that are
a little bit
more...
Yeah, we see her in, like, gold.
Yes. They're a little bit more austere, you know, than other painters.
I feel like when I think of paintings of Mary Magdalene, I think of her in, like, pink.
Yes.
Like, that kind of, like, pastel pink that people put her in.
Yes, but she's painted in gold.
Interesting. I love that.
And she starts painting some other of her, you know, really strong ladies in gold. She does another Judith and Holofernes, which is, it's basically the same painting, but the colors are different. It's the same composition, and Judith is in gold this time.
Oh,
yeah, she is.
So she's got sort of an evolving
style. Can we talk about that? Like, do you think this is a commentary on, like, I was here, now I'm in Florence painting for the Medicis, and you're in Rome?
Started from the bottom.
Now I'm here!
Yeah.
Like a come at me, bitch, kind of a thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and we'll talk some more about her signatures, too. I think she very carefully curated who she was and, like, what she represented.
I think that's really interesting. Curating her own identity, I think, is a very interesting... Because she also paints herself as St. Catherine, who is a saint who's flayed, right? Like... Oh, no. She's put on a spiked wheel and tortured and was a martyr, basically. And she paints herself as St. Catherine, the martyr, who's holding the spiked wheel and, like, staring down the viewer of this painting.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really great phrase of curating her own identity.
I definitely think she does. And I'll get more into, like, how her signatures maybe play into that a little bit. But yeah, so she has this kind of evolving style, and that's going to be the case for anywhere she goes. She goes a couple more places, and her style evolves with the place.
Yeah.
But it's always similar subject matter. She always continues painting these sort of historical strong ladies. So after she leaves Florence, she returns to Rome for a little bit in 1620 or 21, and she's with her husband and her daughter, which you mentioned her. I saw something that said she... had a couple of other pregnancies or children, but they all died in Florence. So she's just got the one daughter. There aren't that many works we have from this period. It's still mostly the women, but there are a couple of reclining nudes that are more for the male gaze, and there's some portraits.
Do you think that has more to do with, like, what's in style of Rome at that time?
I think so, and probably now she's working more for patrons than for herself.
Yeah, that's fair.
The earlier ones when she's in Rome, it's definitely she's only
just
painting for herself.
Yeah. Can we talk about the funniest story in art history really quick?
Okay.
And it's when they hired, was it Michelangelo?
And the Sistine Chapel ceiling?
No. They hired someone to sculpt a Lucifer. Oh, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, but I don't remember.
I don't remember the sculptor now, but they hired him to sculpt Lucifer. Uh-huh. This guy brought Lucifer to them, and they were like, no, 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 no. He's way too hot.
He's too sexy.
We can't have him in the church. Never mind. We're not paying you for this. We're going to go to your brother, who's also a sculptor.
Yeah.
So they go to his brother, who's also a sculptor, and he makes an even sexier Lucifer, who's like just draped with like a cloth over his groin and lounging with his big devil wings, and it's like, this is the best sculpture that they actually put in a church. Yes. Like, I can't with it. That's the funniest story from art history.
I love the
two hot Lucifers.
I love this period of, like, patronage and anything that's about patronage, specifically with the church, because it's very interesting,
I literally just Googled Lucifer sculpture, and then the autofill said, Lucifer sculpture, too hot.
Yes! Okay, I'm gonna put this picture up there, too, so y'all can see what I'm talking about.
It's great.
Holy shit!
It's like a male Adonis, but as Lucifer.
And they made it a
Oh my gosh.
Okay, I'm sorry, Katie.
Okay. I'm always happy to pause for two hot Lucifer. So when she's in Rome, she has this sort of re-encounter with the Roman Caravaggism. Everyone's trying to be Caravaggio and copy that style. There's so many artists doing this. And so she re-encounters that when she's in Rome, and it affects her style again. After she's in Rome, she leaves in, I think it's 1628, I want to say, was when she left Rome. And then she goes to Naples, and she has kind of her Neapolitan period.
Okay.
So besides a short, a 3-year trip to London, let's be clear, like, short is like...
3 years in London.
Yes, she goes to help her father with something, some kind of commitment.
I bet she probably did pretty well in London.
I want to know more about her in London.
I feel like she probably gallivanted around the town with society.
Yes. I know there's some surviving letters from when she's in London, but I don't read Italian.
Okay, wait, hold on. We're in
1638 is when she goes.
Oh, hold on. When is Shakespeare writing?
Shakespeare's like early 1600s. This might be
a little after Shakespeare.
Yeah, okay. I can't remember exactly. But
God, if they had met... I need a Shakespeare play about Artemisia!
Because he died in 1616.
Yeah.
So it's about, a few years after that. But she's there from 1638 to 41. But besides that short trip, she lives in Naples for the rest of her life. She transfers due to some promises of patronage. She has, like, about 3 patrons that are, higher up in society.
They're, like, living in Naples?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
And at this time, Naples is controlled by Spain. It's got more Spanish in it.
Oh!
It's also a lot more conservative.
Oh.
So her style evolves again to go with that kind of conservative style. So this is not the same, like, opulent Florentine Artemisia.
Sure.
It's different.
I don't know what year she painted that St. Catherine, but I'm wondering if that might be more around this time, because it is a little bit more...
She did paint a St. Catherine, I think, while she was in Florence, but it was for someone else, so it might not have been the same one.
Okay.
And she does paintings a few times.
Yeah.
Some that she does, kind of over and over. So that's kind of the end of the timeline. And then I wanted to talk a little bit about this idea of her signatures.
Mm-hmm.
And this is coming from a particular article. It's called Identity Signs, Meanings and Methods in Artemisia Gentileschi's Signatures.
Mm.
It's by Judith Mann. But basically,
that name sounds familiar.
But basically, it's talking about... she signs about 40% of her paintings. For the time, that's kind of a lot. If you compare it with her contemporaries, it's sort of a lot of paintings she actually signs. But she always signs them in different styles, different formats, different spellings. They're very rarely similar.
Huh.
And this kind of leads to, just to preface, there are questions about whether or not the signatures are actually hers.
Okay.
Because I think she's mostly illiterate,
But she did sign court documents, so I think she could at least sign her name.
I agree. And here's kind of what Judith Mann has to say about it.
Okay.
There's this letter that she writes to Don Antonio Rufio in 1649. Uh-huh. And it says, "Please do not wonder about the different handwritings, because I dictate my letters while I am painting. When you see my signature, you will be sure that this letter is mine." So that suggests that she has people write the actual letters, but she's the one that signs them. And she has a recognizable signature.
Sure. You know? First of all, I love that.
Yes.
Second of all, I want someone to dictate letters to, and I'll just sign.
Well, you're just painting.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes.
Literally.
Who would you write letters to?
I would write letters to so many people if people still sent letters. Yes, I know I sound like a hipster. Don't even look at me like that.
You send a carrier pigeon too?
No, because that's stupid.
You're stupid.
Fine.
You're stupid.
He's stupid. I'm not going to house carrier pigeons. I just want to send letters.
We've all seen the producers. Yes.
That didn't go well, did it?
Yeah, it did.
No.
The musical was a hit.
Springtime.
Oh my god.
Germany. Okay.
So that suggests that, you know, it's written by others, but it's signed by her.
Yeah.
The signature is fairly uniform, and it's recognizable to the people she's writing letters to.
What?
So there's a certain consistency about the signature and the letters as far as spelling and how it's written.
Okay.
But her painted name appears differently for each painting that's signed.
Oh.
So not only in just, like, placement and how she works it in, but, like, the spellings are always different. And sometimes she'll use just her initials, or she'll use a different name.
Huh.
She only uses the same placement when her subject is the same. So for all three Susannas, they all get the signature kind of beside her legs on the fountain.
Sure.
But everything else is different.
So on these... are they also spelled the same way for all three?
I'm not certain about that. She didn't say whether they were spelled exactly the same. But,
interesting.
Yes. Sometimes she'll do them on one line. Sometimes it's two or three lines. Hmm. Sometimes initials. You know, she does all kinds of different things.
That's very fascinating.
Also, during her stay in Florence, she signed some of her works Artemisia Lomi. And it's to emphasize her relationship to this artist uncle she has, Aurelio Lomi.
Oh.
So she kind of uses different names in different forms to emphasize different things.
So would her uncle, what did you say his name was?
Aurelio Lomi. Yes.
Aurelio. Was he more known in Florence than, like, her dad Orazio may have been?
I would say probably yes. Because he lived in Florence.
Oh, yeah. He did. Yes. Okay, so she's trying to establish this connection.
Yes. Yeah.
In a new place where people may not know who Orazio is. Oh! God, she's smart.
This is really an interesting
one. She is a savvy businesswoman.
Yes.
Can we talk about this?
Yeah.
And I love her. She's my hero.
Yes. So she does that kind of thing all the time, and so what Mann is suggesting is that she's consciously manipulating these things so that it suits her purposes.
You
know, she can indicate a relationship, she can indicate her gender, say something about the subject.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what the article is about, and definitely, like, I don't know if we can link it, but, like, look that up if you...
Yeah, that sounds like an incredible article.
It's really interesting.
There are some really great books being put out about Artemisia. I would say since, like, the 90s, that's kind of, I would say, the renaissance of Artemisia is. Yeah. But, yeah, there's some really interesting articles that are being written about her. There are a couple of movies that are about her. I haven't watched them myself, because I keep feeling like I hear mixed things about them, and I don't want to get angry and just yell at my TV alone. But if you watched any of them, let us know.
Yes.
Let us know what you think.
Definitely. So that's about it as far as her paintings. So that's kind of our portrait of Artemisia.
Oh, our portrait of Artemisia. Yes. Ooh.
Artist, the businesswoman.
I see what you did there.
The general badass.
General badass. Yes. Honestly, if I was making an army of badass women, I would want her as a general.
Yeah.
Duh.
I feel like she would be the one, like, give me the damn knife, I'm going. Like, you know.
Yeah, but, like, also, like, I feel like she's a really good tactician.
Mm-hmm.
And, like,
yeah.
She could plan some battles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I follow her lead.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
I follow her. Like, Hamilton followed Washington.
I'm also just a
follower. That was a Hamilton nerd history joke for you guys. I hope you enjoyed it. They did it. Go ahead. I said my joke. You guys say your thing.
I was just saying I'm a follower.
Okay, great. So that was Legendary Lass's episode on Artemisia. There's another painter that's very similar to her. Mm-hmm. I think probably a little bit earlier, who's also raped, but paints this, like, these biblical women throwing their rapists down wells.
Yes, I can't.
And I feel like we need to do an episode on her, too.
Yes, definitely.
We'll find out her
name. Like, a little addendum to this episode.
Yeah, a little addendum to this episode. Well, thanks for joining us, guys.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
And thank you to Austin's East Cider Company. For our delicious blood orange cider.
Yes.
To get through this episode. Do you guys have anything else you'd like to say?
Thank you guys for listening to us. We're just starting out. And let us know if there's any legendary lasses that you want to hear about.
Yeah. We need to get our Twitter up.
Yes.
And we'll post it with this so that you guys can hit us up with any legendary lasses you want to talk about.
Yeah. Definitely.
And probably like a Facebook. We'll figure it out. We'll post the social medias, you guys.
Bye.
Bye.